Leaning Toward Wisdom, episode 4113. His name is Josh Garrels, G-A-R-R-E-L-S, South Bend, Indiana guy, turns 37 in September. This is from his album called Over Oceans. The name of the song, Decision, and that's the theme of today's show, reaching the point of decision. Welcome inside the Yellow Studio. My name is Randy Cantrell, coming to you from Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas, where it is currently August the 8th, 2017. Looks like it's fixing to be a stormy day here in North Central Texas. You can go find the show notes at leaningtowardwisdom.com. Just search for episode 4113, and you will see a photograph. It's a blurry photograph, but it's the graphic for today's show. Three big nice looking milkshakes. Strawberry, vanilla, chocolate. I love them all. I'll take one of each, please. Wait a minute, what? They're 2,700 calories a piece? I've been on a restricted calorie diet, self-imposed, for some weeks now. I don't even allot myself 2,700 calories a day these days. And so, I could decide to take a bite out of each one. That would be three bites. How many calories would that be, do you think? Couldn't be more than 500, could it? I don't know. Well, it probably could. Well, the kind of bites I would take, it probably would be. But, you know, it might be worth it. Might be worth it. 500 calories. That'd be 25%, one-fourth of my caloric intake for today. Three bites? I don't know. Be a tough decision. I mean, what if I took three bites of one flavor? Because I probably do prefer one flavor over the other, but I like all three. Or maybe I could take two bites of one flavor and one bite of another. Or there's an obvious decision, another obvious decision, just don't take any bites at all. Just save the calories, and then I could eat a whole bowl of oatmeal for 500 calories. There's a terrific choice. There's a decision for you, oatmeal or a shake. Through the years, I've read considerable stuff, and I've thought a lot about, yeah, stuff. That's the official word for it, about decision-making. You know, I've seen that three-second rule. Have you seen this? There's some lady, and she puts this forth. She's pretty entertaining. I don't know if she gave a TED Talk, and I should have done some research, but I didn't. I didn't care that much about it. It's a three-second rule, and there's something to it where, you know, you take action within the first 3 seconds because if you don't, well, you're probably not going to. I've used that rule with the grandkids in the pool this year, especially at the beginning of the summer when some of them could not yet swim. They can pretty much all swim now, even the two-year-old, thanks to mom and dad who took them to, well, they weren't really swimming. They were kind of sort of swimming lessons. It was really more about survival and teaching kids don't panic, you know, if you fall in the water, and teaching them how to flip over and float and all that good stuff. But boy, at the beginning of the summer, you know, you try to convince the oldest of my son's oldest, who's still one of the youngest of the five grandkids, you know, just jump, just go ahead, jump, jump in, you know, now just stand there and stare at it and think about it. And there's something to that three-second rule. I mean, if you don't do it, like in that moment, okay, you're going to talk yourself out of it. There was a video, and I think I shared it over to the Facebook group. What? You're not inside the Facebook, the private Facebook group for Leaning Toward Wisdom listeners? What's your deal? Easy to find. Just go to leaningtowardwisdom.com, and you will see a link where you can click, knock on the door, and I will let you in. And you can stay as long as you behave yourself. I think I posted over there. There was a, I don't remember who did this, but there was some organization that got people to jump from a pretty high platform into a pool. And they had a camera and they had a microphone. And the anguish, just the anguish of people in making that decision to jump or not. It's pretty interesting. Pretty interesting. I've seen all sorts of game theory kind of advice, you know, on how to analyze the pros and the cons of a thing. And I guess we all do that to some degree. You know, we draw that line down the middle of a piece of paper and, okay, put the pluses on one side and the minuses on the other, you know. I've what-ifed things. I've what-ifed things till I was just blue in the face, as blue as Tobias on Arrested Development. That was a great episode. It's coming back. So they claim. I don't know when. Arrested Development, that is. You would think that decision-making would just get easier over time, right? I mean, that we would become adept at it with practice. And maybe we do. Here's the problem. Not every decision is the same. Even decisions that seem to be the same aren't the same. They just aren't. I mean, hit me with a choice of three ice cream shakes after I have stuffed myself with tacos. I'm not going to have any problem making a decision. No, I'm not interested in a milkshake. But ask me when I'm craving something sweet and my stomach is empty and I'm going to be tempted to, yes, I'll take one strawberry, one vanilla, and one chocolate. Thank you very much. Because the circumstances change. And with those circumstances, our decisions change as well.
We are. and sign with our forgotten names. We left home on the open road to find the holy flames. We are the children of a sun king. Hold on to my hand this mysterious evening. It'll meet us like a dream. Call out our names and we'll be fine. Walking where we heard the sound on down. Tomorrow mountain we will climb. Tonight the stars and fire shines in our eyes. In the woods we're alive. Oh, oh, oh.
Same record, same artist, Josh Garrels, Over Oceans, that's the record. Name of the song is Fire by Night. As a longtime retailer, I have studied people's behavior for as long as I can remember. Well, long before I got into retail, actually, which was at about 15 or 16. But I pay attention, especially when people shop. When you're in retail, you do pay attention to that sort of thing. Those impulse items at the grocery store, they have long held my fascination. And I've watched as those items have changed through the years, because years ago, nearly all grocery shopping was done by mom. And guess what? Mom had kids in tow. And kids pay attention to crap hanging on a peg that isn't any higher than they are. I mean, they grab things, you know, like little junky, brightly colored toys that are hanging mere inches off the ground on a display. And they'll hold those up to mom and they'll please, hey, can I have this one? Can I have this? And over time, those items on the impulse display, they have become increasingly more practical and generic as both men and women of all ages, with or without children, go through the checkout aisle. You know, things like batteries and lighters and cough drops and eye drops and aspirin and more batteries. Those things begin to keep the staple things that were always there, like gum and mints and candy, kept those things company. The items change, and they have changed because, well, people were making different decisions. Well, and because different people were coming through, and different people make different, you know, mom with a 3-year-old is making a different decision than a dad who smokes. I still watch as people survey all those items, scan. I don't go to the store nearly as often as maybe I used to. Do any of us? I don't know. I still watch those people survey those items, scanning for the prospect of picking something up. You know, I mean, you can almost hear people talking to themselves inside their head. Do I need AA batteries? Hey, look, Twix. Boy, I love Twix, but I don't need one of those. But man, they're awfully good. I mean, we can be vexed by the smallest decisions. A $5 shake. Yeah, $5. Yeah, I mean, if I'm going to do a shake, I'm going to go for the super jumbo deluxe size. I'm going for the $5 bad boy. I've never quite understood. You know, you can pay $4 for a medium or $5 for the super jumbo. Yeah, a dollar? Yeah, give me. Yeah. Wait, I can get 1,000 more calories for a dollar? Pack them on, buddy. A $2 pack of batteries, $2 candy bar. How ridiculous is that? It is ridiculous. Which leads to numerous thoughts about pricing decisions, how we price things as business people or as sellers, and how we view prices as consumers or buyers. I mean, those are some serious decision points where companies spend millions of dollars attempting to get it just right. I mean, price it too high, well, you lose business. Price it too low, you leave money on that proverbial table where all the money goes, on the table. I'd be good with that if I owned the table, but I always seem to be stuck with just a chair, no table at all, much less one that has money piled high on top of it. I've been guilty of underpricing way more than I have been guilty of overpricing. In fact, I don't know that I've been guilty of over. That sounds terribly modest, doesn't it? But I think it's true. In fact, just recently, I lost some business because I was too low. And I knew it when I did it. No, they don't tell you, well, we're sorry, we're going with another vendor who charges more money. They don't tell you that, but, you know, some of us have ways of finding these things out. But I knew it. I knew it the minute I did it. Given the scope of the work, it just seemed right to me. It seemed fair. The prospect, they really weren't wanting anything that I frankly found tremendously challenging not that it didn't have value. It had value, and I understood the value. It wasn't that complex, but I blew it. I freely admit I blew it. Absolutely blew it. I came in at a fair price based on how I value my time. In fact, I'll tell you, the proposal was ample. And I don't charge by the hour, but it was about $600 an hour. Well, there are a couple of issues. And I knew both of these issues. In fact, I know both of these issues very, very well. One, there's the budget. What has the person allocated to spend? Go to the grocery store with your budget, and if you save a few bucks, you might be tempted to spend some money. Well, those Twix bars at the checkout, they may be calling your name. It's a wise investment, if you ask me. But go to the grocery store with a budget and discover, man, there's something on the, I did not put this on the list, and it's something we really need. I mean, it'd be something like eggs or milk. And we've got to have them, and now all of a sudden we're over budget. Okay, well, now those Twix bars at the checkout, you don't even notice them. You don't even glance at them. You're already over budget. Businesses work a little bit different, though, in that they have a budget, but that budget is often based on a second thing, and that second thing is expectation. Title track from Josh Garrell's Over Oceans. Yeah, it's the title track. That's the name of this song and the record. The songs on this record are all pretty long, so I'll just give you a little bit more of this one. I like the album a lot. I like him a lot. You wouldn't believe he's a hip-hop producer, too, would you? Yeah, me neither. Ah, but he is. Josh Garrell's. Expectation, that's the other element in play here, especially when it comes to businesses. But it's true of you as a consumer. It's true of me as a consumer. It's what do we expect to pay? And I will tell you that that's one thing that absolutely bit me in the butt on this last deal. This is largely the result of the market. In business, we often talk about what the market will bear, which simply means how much you really get for a thing. How much can you get for it? Well, the market determines that. A thing, a product, a service, it's only worth what people will pay. If you go back about 5 years ago in Dallas-Fort Worth, a house in Dallas-Fort Worth was worth about, based on rough numbers that I've read, it was roughly worth about 20% less than what it is worth today because this is a crazy hot real estate market. Well, you can lament that it was only worth that, but different time, different decisions. And it doesn't matter what you think it's worth. What matters is what people will pay you. Well, I blew it in both of these areas, and I knew it when I priced it. And this is where being a contrarian, I admit it, I am. This is where being a contrarian, it hurt my chances to get the client. Was it a tough decision for me? It was not a tough decision for me at all. I lost no sleep over it. I didn't even bat an eye in pricing this thing. But I probably should have batted at least one eye. I should have likely given it more thought, but it felt right. It seemed more than fair, and the service that I was proposing, the one that the prospect needed, the one that they requested, the one they wanted, it was not complex. It was not deep. And this is where my anti-guruism, it never serves me. I'm not fond of gurus. I'm not fond of people who describe themselves as thought leaders. I've regularly told people for many years, I am not a thought leader. I'm a thoughtful leader, but I'm not a thought leader. People will make a decision to buy sometimes based on the perceived value of getting higher end service based on the price. You know that's true. I know that's true. Look at your own life. Look at your own spending decisions. The kicker is, I don't know who I lost to, but it doesn't matter. Because here's what I know. They're not better than me. Not at this particular chore. And I'm going to guess that they proposed a charge that's at least three times what I did. Three times. Yeah, I could have spent more time in that valley of decision or that valley of indecision, ruminating the strategy, you know, thinking it all through. Oh, yeah, okay, lesson learned. So, as you can see, decisions are everywhere and they impact everything in our life because the sum of our life really is nothing more than the collection of our decisions. Okay, go ahead, argue that, well, it's your actions that count. Yeah, true. But your actions are congruent mostly with your decisions. I mean, I'm not likely going to decide to do one thing and then do something different. Well, if I do, it really means I changed my choice. I just made a different decision, and that's why I acted differently. There is a paradox in decision making and in finding our way to that point where we actually make the decision. It's hard to go it alone. I mean, we sometimes need to include other people to help us make sure that we're seeing things clearly, that we're weighing all the pluses and the minuses. The paradox is knowing that we need to make the choice and knowing that we could use wise counsel, then being tempted to care too much what others think, and we make a choice that is not our own. We need to care, just not that much. And I'm talking about what other people think. I'm talking about what other people feel. Listen, I care deeply what one other person thinks. She's my wife. But I don't always care deeply even what she thinks because I have to make up my mind on what I think is the best decision. I did not ask my wife what she thought of my now rejected proposal. I know what she would have said. I don't know, because I've had that conversation with her too many times in the past. And sometimes, many times, she doesn't care. And she's indifferent because she feels it's outside the scope of her expertise, her knowledge, and even what she cares about. It's not that she doesn't care about me growing a business or getting clients, but she's not in it enough. She doesn't think she's got anything to contribute in that regard. I'm not sure she's right about that, but I'm just telling you how it is. And frankly, it would be like her asking me what I thought about some doll outfit that she's sewing. Doll dresses by Rhonda, spelled with an H. No, not dolls, Rhonda. Dolldressesbyrhonda.com. It's not a full-time hockey. It's a hobby. It's a paying hobby, but it's a hobby. Well, she's not going to ask me about that. I mean, she knows better than to ask me about that. I don't have any opinion about these doll dresses, these outfits. I have no opinion about it because I don't know anything about it, and I'm not terribly interested in it. She's not terribly interested in my business pricing strategy either. Indifference isn't much of a help when you're trying to decide. There's another lesson for you. When you're trying to reach a point where you can decide, seeking people to help you who are indifferent, probably not going to be real, real helpful. And the more you care, the harder it can be to decide, depending on the choices. which is why car buying advice for years has included the wisdom of don't fall in love with a specific car. Always, 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 always be prepared to walk away from that dealership if you cannot get the most favorable price. Otherwise, you'll overpay. And the car retailing industry has been built on hoping that you will fall in love with that car so that they can influence you to pay whatever it'll take to drive that off the lot. And they're not the only ones. Real estate works exactly the same way. Fall in love with this house. This house, can't you just see yourself, picture yourself in this house? Look at this yard. Look at this pool. Look at this landscape. Because when you can see, well, you'll pay an asking. Well, you may pay more than an asking price, depending on the market. But care less and realize there's another car. There's another house that would be equally, maybe even more satisfying, and you will then have the leverage to make a wiser choice, a different decision. But man, it can be hard because we like and we love what we like and what we love. I love Twix bars. And Dr. Pepper, the real kind, they're tempting. I haven't had a Twix bar and a real Dr. Pepper. I couldn't. It's been eons. When I was younger, I lived on them. They're tempting, though. Stick a Pepsi and a Three Musketeer bar in my face, easy decision. I can just very easily walk away, shove that across the table. I don't care about either one of those things. And such is the delicate nature, the delicate high wire act of decision making. Josh Garrel's Train Song. Like you couldn't tell that.
Shame on you. Shame on me. Lord, it took all that shame, pain, I set man free. And I got that fire on the mountain, fire in my soul. It's been a long time coming, long time, and I'm ready to go. And I'm stepping out the door, I'm doing what feels right. Following my law through the darkest night. And when the path gets narrow, I follow him. And when the world comes down around, I'll be with him. I
I do like the record. This is over a 7-minute song, though. No, not going to do it. Not going to do it. I mean, other than the first two tracks, I haven't played anything complete and probably won't. It's a good record, though. Josh Garrel's Over Oceans. This is called Train Song. By now, I probably should tell you what prompted today's topic. And that very simply is my professional life. Big choices, big decisions. I mean, they always are, right? When it's your occupation, when it's something you're trying to do to earn a living. And for me, some of the questions were, well, what do I want to do? What should I do? Where can I provide the highest value? Lots of questions, but those are just some of them. No easy decisions, not for me. I'm not one of those people who always wanted to fill in the blank. I grew up with kids, and I often wonder, some of those kids that I knew in elementary school, especially in elementary school and junior high, and even the kids that I knew from elementary school to junior high and even high school, are they doing? I wonder if they're doing what they claimed they'd always wanted to do, you know, whether it was be an attorney or a doctor or a dentist or whatever. There wasn't anything like that for me. And there are other considerations as well. There's my marriage, my wife. There's my kids, my grandkids. And there's my biggest work, my non-paying money-wise work at church. There's my schedule and how available I need to be for the various roles that I'm serving, important roles. They don't pay money, but they're important. Well, I didn't always have to consider those things. And now these things are big factors in the decision-making, and that makes it harder. Months ago, I decided I was going to work toward creating some virtual online peer advisory groups of small business owners. Think mastermind group. It's an easy way, and most people know what that means or have some sense of it. Many people in my life could not see what I could see, and some still can't. In fact, many of them can't. Doesn't matter. They were not tasked to make the decision. I was. It's my career. It's my occupation. My life. It's not theirs. And that's where I want to kind of wrap up today's show and kind of lean toward the finish line here. Focusing all of us, you and me, on our responsibility to own our choices. And it isn't that other people don't matter. They do very much. And we absolutely positively must seek wise counsel. I mean, come on, that's completely congruent with what I'm seeking to do, to try to encourage small to medium-sized business owners to get in a room of other SMB owners is valuable. By being in a group of your peers where people can help you is a hugely important thing. But at the end of the day, you got to make a decision. It's not groupthink. And you got to decide based on what you think you want to do, not based on what you think somebody else wants you to do. Because if you do that, you're likely going to fail, largely because it's not your choice, because you don't own it. You need a greater investment in your decisions if you're going to make them stick and if you're going to make them successful. One of the worst things that we do to each other is we naysay. We naysay when somebody makes a choice that might be different from the one that we would have made. And I'm not really talking about a choice necessarily between wisdom and foolishness. I'm talking about really subjective choices, though. And isn't it funny how such a choice can be labeled wise or foolish depending on how much it matches our opinion? If I think dropping out of college to start a business is a smart thing, I will not likely think it's foolish for somebody to do that. But if I think education is the path to all that is right and all that is profitable, then I'm liable to think you're an idiot. You're an idiot for dropping out of school. Beauty is in the eye of the beholder and all that. Vision is a big deal. Your vision, but also the vision of the people around you. You've heard it said that in the land of the blind, the one-eyed man is king. I'm going to tell you not necessarily. Not necessarily. In the land of the blind, the one-eyed man can also be a freak, abnormal, the guy made fun of because, well, he's not like everybody else. No, we're all blind. He's got an eye. Why, if he was smart, he'd poke that eye out and he'd be like the rest of us. There is something to that, and you know I'm right. Just because others can't see what I see does not mean I'm wrong. Now, it doesn't mean I'm right either. It just is what it is. According to various sources, and it's based on the quantifiable number of peer advisory companies that are around the globe that serve CEOs, less than 1%, get this now, less than 1% of all CEOs take advantage of sitting at the same table with other CEOs so they can learn and grow and improve. That is, less than 1% of all CEOs take advantage of a quote-unquote CEO peer advisory group. Now, there are many reasons for this, and we're not going to get into that, but none of the least of which is so few CEOs even know about it. But this isn't really about the reasons why it's so rare. It's about my decision to play in that arena, even though it's a crazy small arena globally. It's about what I see in myself. It's about what I see in the market opportunity, and it's about what I see in the work itself. And I'm using myself as an example to help you in whatever decisions you're currently facing, or ones maybe you'll soon face. It starts with you. You. It always starts with us. Now, for me, I had to acknowledge what I wanted mostly, and that was to be myself. I've used this illustration before, but it bears repeating. Give me an opportunity. Behind door number one, there are 200-300 people. There's some really interesting people over there, and you can spend 3 hours in that room. Just kind of work the room. Behind door number two, there are 6 people. You can sit at this table. You'll be number 7, and you guys can just spend 3 hours and have whatever conversation y'all want to have. I am picking door number 2 every single time. I'm not even tempted by, if you give me those options, I'm not tempted by option 1. I want door number 2. I wanted to be myself, and I wanted to leverage my natural aptitude and my personality traits. Now, other people can tell me all the time, and they often do, you should blah, blah, blah. You know, I tell you what you should do. You should do that. You should do that. And it's helpful to know, I guess, what other people see in me, but they're not me. I have to live with me 24/7, 365. They don't. And almost 100% of the time, they will use that phrase, and then they'll end it with something that really interests them. And that's blindingly obvious to me, anyway. And I get it. I'm completely empathetic for where they're coming from because that's one of my superpowers, as you well know. And so when somebody has, they have an interest and they're pigeonholing my skill set or where they think I've got capacity to their interest, and that's what, this is what you should do. Well, I get it. Problem is, it doesn't interest me. Not like it interests you. And just because other people see some capacity or some capability in me does not mean that I'm going to care about making that choice. Ditto for you. Socrates said, know thyself. Well, that ain't easy. It's doable, but it ain't easy. It requires honesty, bravery, honesty to know what you're not so great at. Honesty to know what you feel like you are great at, and honesty to get that right. Well, that's a hard thing for some. Yeah, because some of us are delusional. We think we're really great at something, and no, not so much. And it requires bravery to face it, bravery to tell other people to shove off because, well, you see something they may not see yet, and the bravery to own it, even if you fail. The point of decision comes when you must do it. Yeah, it can arrive before that, I guess, but not usually. And that's why deadlines work. We universally delay until we are forced to make a choice. I wish I had some easy, quick tip of wisdom about this, but I just don't. I think we should take whatever time we need and no more. Boy, that sounds smart, doesn't it? But it's really stupid. I mean, think about it. Take all the time that you need, just don't take any more. It's really stupid because how do we know we've had enough time? I don't know about you, but more often than not, I'm going to think, I don't have enough time. I need more time. And here's what I've come to understand. There is a priceless value of time. And the high price of delay is that you're doing nothing while you're deciding. Because deciding and doing, they're not the same thing. You got to have them both, but you really got to get quick about getting on to the doing. The best outcome, this will be the most brilliant thing I'm going to tell you today. The best outcome is to make the right choice quickly. The worst outcome is to make the worst choice slowly. Told you it was brilliant. I know you're going to want to write it down. The best outcome is to make the right choice quickly. the worst outcome is to make the worst choice slowly. Yep, I said that. I want to make the right choice as quickly as possible, and so do you. There's a rub. Well, isn't there always a rub? Yes, there's always a rub. You can do it over. More often than not, we can fix it. Now, that's not always the case. Okay, I got my pricing thing wrong. Client picked another vendor. I can't fix it. I can't go back. Wait a minute. I didn't mean to price it so low that you wouldn't think it was value. No do-overs. Well, that may be true with this client, but there are do-overs in that, okay, I can learn from this, and now will I make that same decision next time? Not likely. I see an enormous opportunity to impact the lives of just 14 business owners with my new venture. My new venture is The Peer Advantage. You can go to thepeeradvantage.com if you're curious. Will it work? I don't know. I don't know. And I won't know until I've exhausted myself trying. But at some point, I'll have either succeeded or I will have failed. Now, I think I will have succeeded. And I think if you give me just a little bit more time, I think I'm going to be able to come back to you and tell you that I'm crazy wildly successful at this. I've got some barometers and I've got some people in my life who will help me gauge it. And maybe at some point I'll dissect kind of my strategy. I haven't just willy-nilly done this. I mean, for instance, I am producing a podcast called Year of the Peer with Leo Battari. Leo Battari is a co-author of a book entitled The Power of Peers. I produce his podcast. It's not a paid gig. I volunteered to do it. I called him up. I cold called him. I said, dude, you need to have your own podcast. We talked about it. He took me up on it. And here we are 8 months or so into the thing. That was strategic. Mostly, I will tell you, I've got a strong desire to do this work. Now, I will freely tell you, I hate the client acquisition part of it, because hawking myself is crazy hard. My humility hurts me, just like my humility with pricing. It cost me this recent engagement. I priced it too humbly. I'm like you, though, and many other people. I can easily undervalue myself. But you and me, give me an hour. Give me an hour, and I promise you I will be able to spot what it is going to take to help you establish your market value, and better yet, I'll be able to help you develop a strategy that'll work to take your business forward, because I've been doing it for decades. I can do that, he says as a text comes through his phone and dings in the background. You would think after hundreds of episodes of podcasts, a guy would know to turn the notifications off, but you would be wrong. See, there's a decision that I should have made, but I did not make. Costly? No. Priceless. Priceless. You got to experience that. Where was I? Yeah. Operator, would you trace this call and tell me where I am? You can easily undervalue yourself. We all can. I describe myself a little bit like the barber or the mechanic. You know, the mechanic, he's fixing everybody else's car. Meanwhile, his car's out back on blocks. I mean, I hadn't had time to get to it. My grandfather told me, you know, the barber to find, of course, I don't need one anymore, but the barber to find is go into a barber shop and the guy that's got the worst haircut, he's the best barber. Seemed curious to me as a little boy until he explained it. Yeah, because he's having his, you know, the coworkers are cutting his hair. If they've all got good haircuts, yeah, he's probably the guy cutting their hair. Makes sense, right? Smart stuff. You can undervalue yourself. I can very easily look at you, look at whatever business opportunity you've got or even career opportunity and dissect it and give you some strategy that I can promise you can help move things forward. It's what I do. It's that life coaching part of what I do, and I'm good at it. But I can't do it for myself, for all the tea in China, as they say, because it's personal. It's me. And that's a whole different ballgame involving a completely different decision-making process. Should it? I'm not saying that it should. I'm just saying that's the truth. I'm being honest. Because there's a whole different level of involvement. Me. It's very personal. So about a week ago, I made a new decision. One I've made before, but I had a hard time sticking with it. And the decision was to view what I'm doing professionally through the lens of service rendered and value provided. Is the service that I will render through the Peer Advantage valuable to those I seek to serve? No question. I have no doubt. In fact, I believe it is so highly valuable that it will change not a few lives, but it will change every single life that is involved. I'm trying to build two groups of seven, so that's 14 people. I'm convinced, I'm fully convinced, I firmly believe, I've got all the faith in the world, it will change 14 people's lives. I believe that. I believe that every member of the Peer Advantage will be positively changed by being part of it. In a word, I believe it will be transformational. Is it valuable? I think it's grossly underpriced. And the details don't matter for this conversation, but I will tell you that it's ridiculously low priced. And now, especially in light of this latest proposal shot down, I'm a little bit worried about that. I'm fearful that maybe I'm not thinking clearly based on how I know prospects can set an expectation based on price. I mean, give something very valuable to people without cost, they're not going to value it. Question, how many free PDFs do you have on your hard drive? I need to do a search on mine. It's a ridiculous number. Ridiculous number of PDFs that I've never opened. I've never, you know, hey, here's a PDF and the title sound catchy. It's clickbaity, right? And they want you on their email list and we all do it. What's it worth to you? I can tell you I haven't read a good one yet. And I've read some. Is it really that they're worthless? Or is it that I didn't pay anything for it and therefore I don't think it's got any value? Charge people an arm and a leg and they're going to think it's far more valuable. And I think for a business owner operating a multi-million dollar business, charging tens of thousands of dollars to transform their life, that's a bargain. But I also know that value has to be established and proven. And so the decision to charge more, well, that's a difficult decision. And this is where my practical business approach doesn't always help me. And I'm aware of that. And so I lean on other people to give me some feedback. Because I know that I alone have to decide, but I still want their feedback. And there is something else in play in my decision, and that is return on investment for my clients. I'm intent on delivering at least a 10x return. That is, for every dollar a client pays me, I want them to get 10 back or more. Because that just seems like a great value proposition. Give me a dollar, I'll give you a 10 in return. Well, all day long. And that's what I want. I don't like to owe people. I would much rather be owed than to owe. And so my choices reflect who I am and how I feel, not just how I think and what the strategies tell me is smart. And it's that thinking that will kill us sometimes. We are what we think, all of us. So if I think my value tops out at $600 an hour and I price myself accordingly, then I guarantee that I will earn no more than that. And shifting that thinking upward, that's hard. Quick, right now, name an annual income amount that you think would represent the top of the mountain for you. Got it? What was it? Was it $65,000 a year? Was it $150,000 a year? Was it $10 million a year? Was it something in between, something higher? If you're like most of us, you mentioned something that you felt was realistic, but a stretch. Likely an amount that you have not yet earned ever before, but an amount that you could kind of sort of see yourself making. Maybe not tomorrow, but someday. You know, so that's what it is. It's one of those someday dreams. You know, it's one of these days. Now, I want you to realize that that proverbial 1% of people, yeah, that 1% that's often lambasted, is comprised of people who earn about $400K a year. It's not people who make millions. Yeah, there are folks who skew the numbers for sure because they make millions and millions and millions and some make billions of dollars a year. But $400,000 puts you in the top 1% worldwide. That's a little under $1,100 a day. For most of you, that's a number that you cannot imagine. It's almost $33,000 a month. How many people earn that much? I have no idea. I was hoping you knew. I can tell you this, it's millions. There are millions and millions of people making $400,000 or more a year. It's not a handful, it's millions. Millions of people earn that much or more. I'll tell you, millions of people in America earn that much. And no, they're not all surgeons. They're not all professionally skilled people. In fact, I would venture to guess that most of them aren't those things. Most, I would venture to guess, are in a variety of pursuits and businesses. But what matters is what you see. What matters is what you believe, because that's what's impacting your decisions. If you believe that the top of the mountain for you is $65,000 a year, then that's your top. And that's also your limitation. Creation Song is from the same Josh Garrels record, Over Oceans. Your decisions are going to mirror your vision and your belief. If I believe that $600 an hour is a fair price for my time, no matter what, well, then there's my limitation. I lost out to a person who likely charged $1,000 more an hour based on an hourly rate, but that's not how these things were proposed. I'm just using that to give you a reference point for my argument. Am I really less valuable at what I propose? No, absolutely not. Fact is, I think I'm better than whoever likely got the gig for a much higher rate. But they made the decision to charge what they knew they could get. I made a different decision. And it cost me. And your decisions are costing you too. So let's learn from them. And let's do better in the future. Go to the website, leaningtowardwisdom.com. I'd love it if you would join the Facebook group and interact with us there. My name is Randy Cantrell. Welcome inside the Yellow Studio. Yeah, I know. I told you I was going to try to keep these things to half an hour. It's going to take me a while. You're going to have to bear with me. I did make a decision to try to go that, but, you know, normally we've been 90 minutes, so right now we're at 61, 62. So one more track. This is from a Boston guy that I discovered some years ago. This is from a 2009 CD that I own called A Watched Pot. He merely goes by the name Blue, B-L-E-U. And why not? You know, I mean, in honor of Tobias on Arrested Development, you got to play a song by a guy named Blue. And when you're talking about making a decision, you kind of have to go with a song by the title Go. So from a CD or a digital download called A Watched Pot, the artist's name is Blue, B-L-E-U, and the song is Go. And that's going to be my encouragement to you. Go and think the best, be optimistic, make the very best decision you can, and make it as quickly as you can. Enjoy.
Thank you.
felt